Elizabeth Elliot says, there's a difference between a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day and a peaceful and happy one. I think it does not depend nearly so much on what happens as it depends on your attitude and your response. Welcome to Gateway to Joy. Here's your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. This is God's word to us. He loves us, and underneath are His everlasting arms. This week, I've been talking about a holy harmony, and I'm delighted to be able to introduce to you a very dear friend of mine. He's a close personal friend of my husband and me, and he's also our family doctor. His name is Dr. Steve Price. And Steve gave us this wonderful testimony one time, and I asked him if we could use it on the air. Listen to Steve's testimony.
On a cold, frostbitten January day in Nova Scotia, he hobbled into my medical office. By the time he hobbled out, I was a changed man. Who was this hobbling, healing stranger? How could he influence an ambitious, energetic, yet overwhelmed young family physician who was hoping to have cured him? I, along with my wife and three young children, had arrived from England a few weeks prior to our encounter. I had left hoping to establish a medical practice in Canada, where, unshackled from the sickness-focused care service of the UK, I could build a centre where the whole person could be treated, body, mind, spirit. I wanted to provide an environment where I could take time to listen to the patient, to know them, care for them, and help to heal them. To quote the Stratford Bard, and one of his crazy descendants lived next door to me in the Cotswolds of England, ambition should have been made of sterner stuff. Because my first weeks in this new frontier had surprisingly melted my firm resolve. I had not only arrived in the snow-driven depths of winter, where power failures, school cancellations, and boiling water and cooking on an open fire now seemed part of life, but being a stranger and having no patience of my own haunted my daily routine. I thank God for a great wife who supported me and prayed daily, for three children, all under the age of five, who took the move in their stride and disappeared like clockwork snowmen into the ever-growing mountains of snow outside the back door of our rented, historic sea captain's home. They emerged happy, red-faced, enticing me to stop and play. Within these first weeks, I had learned that the sale of our English home had fallen through, and our meager savings rapidly dwindled. On my way to a job interview in St. John, New Brunswick, I had skidded off the highway and ditched the car that had been loaned to me, missing the Digby to St. John 5 a.m. ferry by 3 minutes. The general practitioner's surgeon, a truly great but almost extinct species, whose practice I had taken over during his world tour absence, had left me a small area of his paper-mounded desk to work at. His mainly older patients drifted in and out. Unhurried, they chatted with each other, and to Laura, the office secretary, bookkeeper, confident healer, to the postman, the drug rep, the plumber, and whomsoever they chanced to meet. I had been a celebrity in the calendar picture Cotswold village we had left. Our departure had even made the front page of the Cheltenham Times. I had cared for all sorts of people, from TV personalities, lords, ladies, to humble shepherds and tidy wives. I would drive my Morris Thousand from cottages to castles to care for those who could not come to my Stonehouse surgery. The working class and wealthy all became human beings in need of healing. But here, people wondered who I was, why I had come, and if they could trust themselves to a young, funny-talking stranger. But this was the new frontier. To add to my already increasingly overburdened spirit, I was woken at 2 a.m. one weekday night by a caller who refused to identify herself on the telephone. She told me to go back where I had come from. The town did not need hypocrites like me, who said they had come to do good and heal the broken spirit and body as Christ had done. I recognized the voice of that of a wealthy but drug-addicted lady, one of the few patients who did come to see me. I had refused to prescribe the usual narcotic which she took to treat her migraines, and challenged her to seek healing of the hurt child within who had been misused by life. But she walked out on me. A nearby physician requested that I undertake a locum for him while he and his wife attended a medical conference in the Caribbean. His practice was in a small French fishing village near my Yarmouth home. The other doctors in town said, "He's lucky to get anyone to go there, so make sure he pays you well." So the figure I stated, he refused. So I refused, and left his office, penniless, but proud. I had negotiated toughly as directed by my new colleagues, a temporary resolve which soon began to crumble. My sleep was restless, and I longed for those daft and happy hills of Wales from which I was hewn. Facing, not embracing, another January morning, and by now I had cleared the back room of Dr. Webster's office of an old gravestone, medicines from the First World War, piles of yellow in medical magazines, and even a few old bones. I sat in my freshly painted office and waited restlessly. Lauren announced I had a patient who, like the proverbial spy, had come in from the cold. He hurriedly hobbled in. A man of determination, I reckoned. He sat in the patient's chair at the side of my desk. I listened carefully to his story. A good history is always the beginning of the medical encounter, I had been taught. I took all the time I needed to examine him thoroughly, for indeed I had nothing else to do, and made my diagnosis and offered him my cure. I had a strange sense of satisfaction. I thought I might have at last impressed someone in this place. I wanted him to hurriedly hobble out with a smile on his face. But he just sat there. "Doctor, how are you?" he inquired. "Fine," came my reply. "I'm the doctor," I said to myself. "I should be." "Well, I thought I would ask, because you look worried to me," he pursued.
"Me?"
"Yes, you. Do you have anything troubling you?" "Eh," I said to myself again, "who's the patient here? Who is this chap?" In a God-given, unguarded moment, followed by more cathartic minutes, I told him of our move, of our goals to work in ministry and medicine, our struggles, and confession of my sense of inadequacy and failure, and my longing for home, of the difficult patient who had disturbed my sleep and my brain, of the doctor who had requested me to do his work in his practice. This Old Testament prophet had me summed up in seconds. "You've got it all wrong," he declared. "You tell me you've come here to work in medicine and ministry, but you don't know how to love. You've only thought of yourself and the almighty dollar. Did you ever think that that doctor and his wife in that small town might need a vacation, and you could help them achieve a well-earned rest? Can your God supply your needs? By the way, you did the right thing by that lady. You told her the truth, and I like that." Within a few minutes, the tears were rolling down my cheeks. This arthritic stranger had unmasked any of my last defences, and my soul was naked. Who was I to minister to anyone? "You call Dr. Tweedy now, and tell him you'll cover his practice." Childlike, I obeyed, reached for the telephone, but found the Wedgeport line occupied. He took the telephone from me. "Operator, this is an urgent doctor-to-doctor call that must be placed immediately." Within seconds, I stuttered on the phone to my colleague. "Desmond, I will do the locum for you, but on new terms." At this point, the stranger shook my knee and told me to say 2/3 of my original fee. I spluttered. "You might find these strange terms, but I hope you'll agree. I want to do the work as to the Lord. I want no money, but I want you and Mrs. Tweedy to have a lovely vacation, because you deserve it. You've both worked hard over these last 2 years without a break."
"But for no money, Stephen?"
"No, Desmond. I've been taught a lesson today that I hope I'll never forget. I'll tell you about it when I come to see you tomorrow." With my heart enlightened and racing, I replaced the receiver. I looked at my patient. He was wiping the tears from his eyes. "I didn't want you to go that far," he exclaimed. Oh, what precious moments! The joy of that encounter has not left me for over 20 years. When I explained to my wife all that had transpired that day, she was bewildered, but trustful, and embraced her humbled husband. The arthritic prophet stranger who had come to me that day knew all about love and forgiveness. Just because of being a Jew, during the war he had been persecuted in his native country of Lithuania, his parents shot by their neighbors, his beautiful sisters imprisoned in concentration camp, his business stolen by the Nazis. By God's grace, he had escaped to Scotland, where he married, and later he and his wife moved to Canada. He knew firsthand contempt, rejection, impoverishment. But oh, what a mighty spirit he has, and he was used to teach me how to love. The years have gone by. That patient and his wife have become part of our family. There are few decisions that I make without due consultation with him. Each year since coming to the USA 15 years ago, I find myself returning to Nova Scotia to sit and learn and listen, to learn of his faith, his life, his people, and he to learn of mine, of the other Jew who changed my life, a carpenter from Nazareth.
Now there is a concrete example of the kind of total change that God can work in a man's life and heart. We know Steve Price. He's a Welshman, just the most wonderful doctor you'd ever want to know, and also a very good preacher. But we see in Steve the evidence of the transforming work of the love of God.
Growing up, Elizabeth Elliot understood that studying the Bible is a vital priority for the Christian life. And ladies, we can also establish a solid foundation for our lives through daily Bible reading and prayer. Join us next time as we think about the eternal truth of God's Word here on Gateway to Joy. Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your Gateway to Joy. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.